fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution, revolution, revolution. Radio!
Mainlining fake news, believing globalist lies, trusting celebrity instructions, then you are addicted to our own destruction. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Mike Gaddy.
Good afternoon or evening, everyone, here on the 20th of December in the year 2020, a year of abject insanity. And I am joined tonight by producer Dave Scorpio, and we are joined by two lovely ladies from the state of Arkansas. And we are going to go into a pretty good discussion tonight of quite a few subjects, the number one being the fact that we are possibly enduring at this present time the most corrupt criminal enterprise in the history of the planet, and that would be the United States government. And I know that's going to hurt a lot of feelings, and as I have said many times, I usually lay down at night and toss and turn for 15 or 20 seconds, worried about the people I have upset that day. So let's begin with the two ladies from Arkansas and let them introduce themselves and talk a little bit about themselves. So Misty, you want to go first, please?
Yeah, I'm Misty Graham. I'm from Arkansas, as Mike said. I used to be that America was star-spangled awesome, but due to reading and listening to Mike, I've come to a different conclusion.
All right. Thanks, Misty. And Jennifer, tell the folks a little bit about yourself, please.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jennifer Rogers. I'm from Southwest Arkansas, little town of Prescott. Much like Misty, I was very much about the same way, star-spangled, hard right-leaning constitutional conservative Republican voter. And I guess over the period of the last 5-6 years or so, that has changed incredibly. And thankfully, thanks to Mr. Gaddy and several other sources of information, truth, actually, I'm now a staunch apolitical pro-declarationist. And that is where I currently stand.
Well, thanks, Jennifer. I remember I probably met you for the first time a little over 3 years ago and met you at a restaurant. And you came up with a nickname for me after that. What was it? What did you call me? History Jeopardy?
Yes, sir. We had met on Facebook, I think, a year or so before and had chit-chatted on and off. But yes, we met in person at Brown's. And I just sat there amazed because you kept coming up with so much stuff that I'd never heard of or had heard about. And I was like, yeah, you're a Human Jeopardy episode.
Well, that's one of the better nicknames people have for me. So thanks for that, Jennifer. Dave, do you would you tell the folks a little bit about yourself and your program, please, sir?
Well, I would just add that you're a walking encyclopedia of historical knowledge. And, yeah, my show comes on Saturday afternoon from 1 to 4 p.m. Studio A. And last Saturday, yesterday, we had a really good discussion with yourself and Daryl Wayne, and it went over very well with the audience. So thank you for coming on.
It was my pleasure. Well, to jump into this, I should tell you the name of the program tonight, and that is called Addicted to Your Own Destruction. And if anyone was ever addicted to their own destruction, it's the majority of people in this country, because they are clinging on to something that doesn't actually exist. And no matter what you're building, whether it be a criminal empire or, you know, any type business or any other type operation, you have to have a firm and solid foundation for your enterprise. And if you expect it to endure and last for a period of time, and this criminal enterprise that we're involved in has been going on for 230-some years, and the foundation of that, and again, this is not going to make me a lot of friends, but the foundation for that was the Constitution of 1787. The foundation was laid for an empire, and they were people like Alexander Hamilton were pretty open about it. We need an empire. We're going for an empire here. And also, Hamilton said during the Constitutional Convention that we cannot turn this government over to the people because they aren't bright enough. I'm paraphrasing. They're not bright enough to govern themselves. So they need those of us who are wealthy and well-born to take over that task. And that has been done. And if you look around you today, is that not exactly what we still have? We still have the same thing. We still, no one is going to be elected to president without a great deal of money or a great deal of money behind them. People are not going to be elected to Congress without a great deal of money or a great deal of money behind them. So it's the, we have a government of the wealthy and well-born. The people really don't matter. The people are here to pay for it. That's what that is for. And unfortunately, again, we get into the fact that we are now staring this monster directly in the face because, as was said years and years ago, governments begin by protecting one part of the citizens from the other part of the citizens and then naturally evolves into protecting itself from everyone. And I made that point with someone yesterday. We were talking about, well, look at this lawsuit. We've got a new lawsuit. So-and-so filed a new lawsuit. And well, you know, the judicial system of this government was designed to protect the government from the people. The judicial system was not designed to protect the people's rights. And that, again, is an illusion or what we're addicted to that and that we're therefore addicted to our own destruction. It began to fall apart very quickly, but it did not fall apart so terribly bad as it has since that period of from 1861 to 1865 that we call the Civil War, misappropriately. I like Stonewall Jackson's definition for that when he said it was our second war of independence, second war for independence, pardon me. And the wonderful lady from South Georgia who said it is the law of northern aggression. So paying homage to her as often as I can. God rest her soul. So we are seeing, and it amazes me, pardon me, but it amazes me that people, you can present, I don't care how much history you present to people, they will go, but. And then they go right off into being addicted again. They cannot, it's like a hard drug. It's like, you know, meth or Oxycontin or something like that. The people who get hooked on this thing called this government of ours, they can't seem to let go. It doesn't make any difference that they can see that it's destroying their lives as it is right now. And they can't see who's responsible for your lives being destroyed. It's not some you know, cold virus, which is what this COVID thing is. It's just another cold virus. And now some of the things are popping out, like the CDC now admits that they are classifying everything. They no longer have a classification for pneumonia deaths. They no longer have a classification for those because everything is now, or flu deaths, everything is now COVID. And of course, you know, we also know that includes gunshot wounds and, you know, and alcohol poisoning and automobile accidents and almost everything else. But a lie will only work if people believe it. And if you don't believe people are believing the lies of this government, just look around you and see how many are wearing masks. But what I wanted to do tonight was to get into some of the atrocities, some of the things that this government has done that illustrates the hypocrisy of ever believing it or trusting it is beyond comprehension. And I'm especially incensed in today's world that our monuments, the Southern monuments, and now they're going to change the name of any military installation or streets on a military installation that bear the name of anyone having to do with the Confederacy. And why is this? Why are we suddenly supposed to hate the Confederacy so much? You know, and we are told that we are to hate the Confederacy because they were racist. Well, you know, we can blow that out of the water in no time whatsoever. But Misty, tell me a little bit about when you were growing up, and we've talked about this before. How did you see and how were you taught about how wonderful this government was?
Well, we started off every day with the Pledge of Allegiance. In music class, we learned, you know, America the Beautiful, Lee Greenwood's song. I can't remember the name of it, but, and, you know, all these, America was, like I said, star-spangled awesome. And then in history class, we were told that the Civil War was fought to end slavery. We were taught that the Constitution was inspired by God. I mean, just lies and lies to make us be patriotic. So our whole lives, we were taught to be patriotic and to trust the government. And a lot of us never outgrew that.
Jennifer, is that a similar story to how you remember being brought up?
Absolutely. That's carbon copy, actually. I mean, same exact things, Pledge of Allegiance. We'd sing, I think it was either God Bless America or, oh goodness, I forget the name of the other one now. It's been that long. Same education about the South. You know, the Southerners wanted to keep slaves, so they broke away and, you know, heroic, honest Abe swooped in and saved the Union. That's what we were taught. And I'm pretty sure that's what my parents and my grandparents and my great grandparents were taught, as millions of others throughout America's history have been taught the same exact lie. And it's gut wrenching now that I know totally the truth of it. It sickens me almost now to see people still believing it.
Well, for either one of you ladies, when was the first time that you heard that the Pledge of Allegiance was written by a socialist?
Ooh, that was, semi-recent for me, at least 10 years ago, I want to say. Someone had made a comment on Facebook, and I was like, surely not. And of course, I hopped right online and started researching and found it. You know, Bellamy was a socialist preacher, tried to preach to his pulpit that Christ was a socialist, and that got him thrown from his pulpit. And I just sat there with a dropped jaw. I'm like, you're kidding me. And I never recited that pledge again. To this day, I won't recite it.
And you, Misty, a similar circumstance?
No, mine was a little bit later. It was when I became acquainted with you that I learned that. I didn't have any idea.
Oh, well, okay. I get blamed for everything. Dave, being a history major, would you like to share your experiences along those lines, please?
Well, very similar, actually. And, you know, the narrative was still somewhat believable. I'd say somewhere until the 90s or so when the Clintons got into office. And fast forward to now, look where we are. We have the government intruding upon every aspect of people's lives and where they go, what they do, who they do it with, and if they're allowed to travel. It's shocking, really.
Well, I came up with a little phrase a couple of days ago, and it just popped out, which things do that to me from time to time. And I told a person I was conversing with, I said, because they weren't in agreement with my position at all, and I said, well, do you remember in 2001 after 9/11 when the chant around the country was, we are all Americans now? Because of 9/11, and he said, yes, I remember that very well. And I said, well, we're all Iraqis now.
Well, so, I remember they hate us for our freedom, Mike. That's what always stuck in my mind.
And you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, right?
That's right.
So that, to me, I think that was a great, and again, it just popped into my head, but they said, we're all Americans now. Now we're all Iraqis. Look, we are going to have and be treated by our government the same way they've treated Iraqis, the same way they have treated every country that's been occupied by this military. We're going to be treated the same way as all of these foreigners have, these foreign countries have been, the people in these foreign countries, we're being treated exactly the same way right now. Because the only difference, instead of a bombing run done on the country, they did a plandemic. But the effects are much the same. Businesses have closed. Things are closed that will never open again. People are out of work. But the upper echelon, the wealthy and well-born, as Alexander Hamilton called them, are getting filthy rich over this. I saw a chart the other day about in the past 9 months, how much the bottom line of so many billionaires have increased exponentially in this 9 month time frame. And that's all at the hands of this government. And we are believing a government on this pandemic. We are believing all of these things. And we are trusting an eccentric billionaire who is all about population control. So we trust him. Then we have Dr. Fauci and others who are bio-warfare producers. And then we have, of course, all of these wonderful, honest politicians. Those are the people we are believing, and we are destroying our life. We are destroying everything around us because we believe those lies. And that, to me, is absolutely incredible. But again, it's not new. This has been going on for quite some time. And so, and I believe that it started, but it got much worse after the so-called Civil War and Reconstruction. And we are living in Reconstruction today. We are being treated much the same as those 10 southern states were treated under Reconstruction. We're treated the same way. Our elections are crap. They are completely dominated by the government. There is no one who is not a government, somehow connected to the government, involved in elections. So with a corrupt government, the only thing you can have are corrupt elections. And then we have a group of people out there running and screaming and saying, well, let's appeal it to the Supreme Court. That'll fix it. Well, guess what? It didn't. Because, as I mentioned earlier, the Supreme Court is there to protect the government from the people. And they will always do that. It's really, really simple. What is the most asinine thing that you have witnessed in the past 9 months, seeing people actually ignoring the truth and just going about their merry way, being idiots?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know where to begin. course, as you call it, and I call it the plandemic, I've never in my life did I imagine something like this would happen, and I probably should have anticipated it. seeing people fall in line with that, with anything that their state empire delivers, you know, hey, you are to wear a mask. You're to close your business. You're to remain 6 feet apart from each other, eat in this partitioned section. And I think the most disgusting and disturbing I've seen is in the elementary schools. And my younger sister has a little boy. He's in kindergarten now, and she shared a picture. Him and his classmates were sitting at, you know, joined tables, but they were separated by plastic partitions. And I thought, that is the saddest thing I've ever seen, that there's such separation. These kids don't understand. To them, this is normal. And everybody else, well, people with more than two marbles in their head are just smacking their foreheads going, what is this? This is insanity. That upset me to see that. I didn't say anything to her, but it really did disturb me.
Well, as it should, I think. And Misty, you manage a restaurant. How crazy has it gotten for you over the past 9 months?
Oh, it's insane. I mean, the rules that we have to follow, a lot. I mean, as far as hand washing and stuff like that, that hasn't changed. I mean, we wash our hands if they get contaminated, when we change gloves, when we do anything that's not food related, you know, that hasn't changed. But the ultra sanitizing, the wearing masks, wearing gloves, handing out food, and some of it is just ridiculous. Like, we have a plastic bucket that we hold out the window that you put your debit card in. Then I reach in with my gloved hand and pick up your debit card. I don't know why. I couldn't just take it out of your hand, but I have to take it out of the plastic bucket, and then I hand it back to you, and then I take your bag and I hand it to you. So, I mean, it's chaos. That stuff is just wild. I mean, none of it makes any sense. I had a lady actually today that my employees are not required by the company to wear a mask coming into the building, but as soon as they get there, they have to put one on. In fact, they don't want you wearing a mask into the building when you first come to your shift because they don't know where that mask has been, is what they're saying, which is okay, whatever. So he didn't have a mask on. So she got upset and she didn't want her food anymore. She was irate. She wanted the number of the office. And I'm like, I mean, nothing you could tell this woman would make her. I'm like, if you're that scared, stay home. But I don't know. It's wild. The whole funeral thing gets to me. That really upsets me. I know people that I know have missed their, you know, their loved ones' funerals because only so many people are allowed in there. I mean, it's wild. This is a wild ride.
Well, it absolutely is crazy. And I read it and I had forgotten I wrote it, but I wrote something about 9 years ago, I think, an article in which I said we would have a pandemic in the country which would require mass vaccinations. I must have been, you know, really drinking a lot of wild turkey back then. I wrote it. I can prove it. But prior to our beginning this today, guys, I sent both of you an article that I had written, quite some time ago. I believe it was in 2004. And I wanted us to discuss that. And Misty, I know that you had read it previously. And Jennifer, it probably was the first time you had ever seen it. I'm not sure. But one of the things, and I wanted really to get into this war between the states debacle. And let me tell you that in this article, and I listed this, I said, all of the facts listed in this article included below, which I wrote in 2004, so that's 16 years ago, are readily available in the 126 volumes of The War of Rebellion, Official Records of the Union and Confederate Armies. Now, it's all there. Everything you're going to hear that we're going to talk about from this point forward, except when we get into another point of discussion, all of the things I will read that comes from this article are actually in the official records. And those records are in the National Archives, Library of Congress, several other places. And if you feel like you really want to spend some money, you can buy all 126 volumes for yourself. And then you can have the official records. Now, these were the official records kept by the Union Army and the Union Command. So don't go telling me these are neo-Confederate, or these are the from the Southern point of view, because they're not. These are the official records of the War of the Rebellion. And these are taken directly from the records of the Union and the Confederate armies. So after the conclusion of the war in 1865, the Union Army, and this, I'm reading from my article, and its war crime infested leadership, and I'm going to prove that, turned their attention on the American Indians, especially those in the West, which included, I had mentioned, Colorado Senator, American Indian by the name of Ben Nighthorse Campbell. And I had mentioned him earlier because he had made a comment in 2004 about what was going on in Abu Ghraib during Iraq. That he, who are these people, was the title of his piece, talking about American soldiers mistreating Iraqi prisoners of war. And so I said, which included Senator Campbell's ancestors of the Northern Cheyenne. The facts of the atrocities mentioned in my 2004 article inflicted on the American Indians can be found also in the National Archives. A thorough study of both resources listed above should prove to even the most dubious that torture and gross mistreatment of others are in the very DNA of the American military. So here's the article as it starts. It appears today there is a distinct division on how Americans are viewing the news of the war crimes perpetrated on Iraqi detainees by American troops. Although the President and the Secretary of Defense have both apologized for these actions, their minions in the press and their shields on the radio are trying mightily to rationalize these acts away. Just the horrors of war, some say. You know, kind of like collateral damage. That's something that's always bothered me. If I am in war, even war started on lies, and there's three people standing together, and I need to, the one in the middle is the enemy, and I kill all three, I am a hero. And those other two innocent people I killed were just collateral damage. Now, is that accepted in the American judicial system? Well, we won't even get into that. That's absolutely ridiculous. And it says, and I said, while even the Democrats on the Senate Armed Services Committee are working hand in hand with their fellow Republicans to keep a great deal of the new evidence of sex crimes and murder perpetrated against Iraqis who had been convicted of no crime out of the hands of the American people. Now, the reason I say this, people, is because other countries were coming out with some of this stuff, but thanks to the good old American media, I mean, they were coming out with pictures and proof and other sources, but because of the good old American media and their control. Let's go back to William Casey, director of the CIA, 1981. We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false. 40 years ago. Wow, that's pretty good, huh? But as I said, all of this is not new. The much-worshipped first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, conducted just such a war against the citizens of the South. Murder, rape, pillaging, and theft were rampant, perpetrated by the Union Army. Charles Adams documents this in his fine work, When in the Course of Human Events, that some northern newspapers call for the total annihilation of the entire people of the South. Now, today, our ancestors were the bad guys. Are there any records of the Southern forces moving into Union-held territory, raping the women, burning their homes, and destroying their cattle, stealing everything they have, carrying it back home? Is there any record of that anywhere? But yet, the Confederate is the bad guy. They're those damn racists. Oh, okay. Anyway. So, it says, and I'll go back to this, Lincoln, the master of duplicity, had issued a code of conduct, if you will, for the Northern Army. It was known as General Order No. 100, also known as the Lieber Code. As Professor Thomas DiLorenzo points out, the code's author was the German legal scholar Francis Lieber, an advisor to Otto von Bismarck and a staunch advocate of centralized government power. In his writings, Lieber denounced the federal system of government created by the American founding fathers as having created confederacies of petty sovereigns, and dismissed the Jeffersonian philosophy of government as a collection of obsolete ideas. In Germany, Lieber was arrested several times for subversive activities. Well, you know, I said that here's something, I'm jumping ship now, I'm moving over to another article, one I am so very proud that has been on the website UnitedNativeAmerica.com and has been there. I wrote this article in 2003, so in January of 2003, so almost 18 years ago now. I wrote this article, and the kind folks at UnitedNativeAmerica.com have had this article up for this entire period of time. I am extremely honored by that. And one of the things that we talk about this, but you know, we aren't taught. We talk about the craziness of the Confederacy and how their monuments need to be torn down, how they were terrible, and you know, they were terrible racist. I don't know, but I believe I could live with a racist better than I could live with a murderer or a rapist or someone who just stole everyone's property. I believe, you know, I might not like them. I might have to distance myself from them. But I wouldn't have to worry about them stealing and robbing and raping and killing. And most people are totally unaware that during this time frame in 1862, the Santee Sioux Indians in Minnesota had gotten upset because all of the money they had been promised for their property was not being paid. And corrupt government officials, I know, imagine that. There's no such thing as an honest government official, I do not believe, because it's not allowed in the fraternity. You may be honest when you get in there, but they're not going to allow you to stay that way, not and keep your job. So the Santee Sioux were allegedly being sent food and all kind of medicines and other stuff in payment for the land that had been taken from them forcibly. And they were, okay, you sign this treaty, and it doesn't make any difference whether you sign it or not. The same thing's going to happen. And America has never kept a treaty that they have established with any American Indian tribe. Not one. So that goes back to another point. But anyway, the Santee Sioux decided, hey, we are going to, they had crooked Indian agents. Imagine that. And they were not providing the substance, the food and stuff that they were getting. They were not providing it to the people themselves. And so the Indians got together and went in and robbed the place and took it. So we had an Indian uprising on our hands during the Civil War. So Abraham Lincoln sent Major John Pope to Minnesota to take care of these people who had robbed this place. And we will get to some of his quotes in a minute. But they went in, and during the Civil War, when those crazy Confederates were defending their homelands, defending their families, defending their wives, defending their children, When they were doing that, the Union Army was in Minnesota rounding up people who were American Indians and put them on trial, and we had the largest mass execution of people of color in America's history while the Civil War was going on, and this was conducted by the Union Army and Abraham Lincoln. Now, benevolent Abraham Lincoln decided that he would not hang all 100 of these people because it might not look good. So he only hanged 39. Now, Jennifer, were you ever taught about that in school?
No, sir. We weren't taught anything of the sort. And I did look that up years ago, and as has been a constant narrative with me, my stomach was turned by it, and I'm just reading the details of it, and that they had to construct a special square-shaped gallows to accommodate all 39 of the Indians, and they hung them all at once, and that blew my mind. I mean, it didn't blow my mind about Lincoln. By the time I'd read that article, I knew of his animosity towards any people of color, honestly, but I had not been aware of his animosity toward Indians. That was a newly learned fact, gut-wrenching as it was.
Well, Misty, were you ever taught about that?
Of course not. I was taught that Abraham Lincoln was the great emancipator and that he freed the slaves and that he loved America. So no, I had no idea. And it wasn't until probably in the last few years or so that I even learned about any of this. So, yeah, it was quite a shock to my system, too.
How about it, Dave, history major? I'm picking on you. I'm sorry.
Was taught that, of course. But, you know, as I've researched into Lincoln, you know, nothing that he did surprises me anymore. The imperial president, nothing surprises me.
Oh, well, that was quite amazing to me in so many ways that this was all going on at that time. And so let's look back at some of this. And as I was saying, and so I'm going to read from my article that you can find at UnitedNativeAmerica.com. And it says, when Lincoln, similar atrocities occurred all through the Lincoln administration. In 1862, the Santee Sioux of Minnesota grew tired of waiting for the $1.4 million they had been promised for the sale of 24 million acres of land to the federal government in 1851. Appeals to President Lincoln fell on deaf ears. What made this even more egregious to the Sioux was the invasion of this yet paid for land by thousands of white settlers. Then, with a very poor crop in August of 1862, many of the Indians were hungry and facing starvation with the upcoming winter. When Lincoln outright refused to pay the owed money, remember he had a war to finance, the Indians revolted. Lincoln assigned General John Pope to quell the uprising, and he announced at the beginning of his campaign, now listen, here's your wonderful American benevolent military dealing with people of color. Okay, quote, it is my purpose to utterly exterminate the Sioux. They are to be treated as maniacs or wild beasts and by no means as people with whom treaties or compromise can be made. Unquote. Lincoln did nothing to challenge that statement by Pope. Probably was proud of it. The Indians were quickly defeated in October of 1862, and Pope herded all the Indians, men, women, and children, into forts where military trials were immediately convened. None of the Indians tried were given any semblance of a defense. Their trials lasted approximately 10 minutes each. All adult males were found guilty of murder and sentenced to death, with the only evidence against them being they had been present during a war which they themselves had declared against the United States government. The authorities in Minnesota asked Lincoln to order the immediate execution of all 303 males found guilty. Again, Lincoln was concerned with how this would play out with the Europeans, whom he was afraid were about to enter the war on the side of the South or the Confederacy. He offered the following compromise to politicians in Minnesota. They would pare the list of those to be hung down to 39. In return, Lincoln promised to kill or remove every Indian from the state and provide Minnesota with $2 million in federal funds. Sound familiar? But here was the crazy thing. He only owed the Sioux $1.4 million for the land. So why did he pay the people of Minnesota $2 million when he could have paid the Indians for their land with $1.4 million and had $600,000 left to play with? So on December the 26th, 1862, got an anniversary coming up here, the Great Emancipator ordered the largest mass execution in American history, where the guilt of those to be executed was entirely in doubt. Regardless of how Lincoln defenders seek to play this, it was nothing more than murder to obtain the land of the Santee Sioux and to appease his political cronies in Minnesota. Lincoln's Western armies, using the tactics of murder, rape, burning, and pillaging, simultaneously being used against Southern non-combatants by the Eastern armies, turned their attention to the Navajo Indians, and I'll get into that in a moment. But here we have, while his soldiers are committing all kind of atrocities, and again, if you'll go into those official records, you'll see all these atrocities. And especially, I would encourage as many people as possible to go to the University of South Carolina and look in their archives in Columbia, if they hadn't been destroyed by now, about how, after the war, blacks were interviewed and their stories were recorded. And go into those archives and listen to the black ladies talking about how they were raped and mishandled by the Union Army. Sherman's bummers, as they were called. Were we taught about that in school, Jennifer?
No, sir. It baffles me. Not so much now, but it still surprises me how little we were taught. But knowing now what I didn't know then, that's the product of federally approved textbooks by the Department of Education, any other department available to control a narrative, to control what we're taught. And we weren't taught any of this. None of this. I fail to have words, honestly, because it's the saddest thing. But I will go so far to say that aside from declaring himself president permanently, Mr. Lincoln was nothing short of a modern day Julius Caesar. For every other action he took was a mirror image of what Caesar had done. I mean, military expansion, armed aggression, killing anyone who dared to defy him, imprisoning those who spoke against him. He was Julius Caesar reincarnated, just short of saying, "I'm president for life."
Well, he didn't live long enough to declare himself president for life. But here is something I would like to bring out, was at this same time, in the period of 1862, William Tecumseh Sherman wrote to his wife, and this is all in the National Archives, people, wrote to his wife that his goal was the extermination, not of soldiers alone, that is the least of the trouble, but the people of the South. He said, while campaigning against the Indians later, after the Civil War, that the only good Indian I ever saw was dead, and lamented to his son shortly before his death that he had been unable to kill all of the red SOBs. Now, who's the racist here? Whose monument should be torn down? And so that is to me something that we don't know. And I was also talking with someone the other day. We were talking about Sherman's March to the Sea, where he cut out a path 50 miles wide. But how many people know that that is listed as the fourth largest ecological disaster on this planet? Sherman's March to the Sea. 50 miles wide, burning everything that they came to, stealing everything else that they could find. So that was part of that crazy thing. I'm going to come back to the Navajo, Lincoln's war against the Navajo tribe in just a minute, because I wanted to also go into reverting back to the other article. And and talking about what was going on in the South while these Indians were being destroyed, the Santee Sioux in the North. Jackson and Meridian, Mississippi would face the same fate from one of Lincoln's favorite generals. They would both be burned to the ground, even though there were no Confederate forces in the area. Sherman's soldiers then sacked the town, and as Sherman biographer John Marchlik wrote, soldiers, and I quote, entered residences, appropriating whatever appeared to be of value. Those articles which they could not carry, they broke, unquote. Sherman would write of the campaign, and I quote, for 5 days, 10,000 of our men worked hard and with a will. In that work of destruction, with axes, sledges, crowbars, claw bars, and with fire, Meridian, Mississippi no longer exists. So, you know, the wonderful thing about Sherman's wife was she was in total agreement. And she wrote that she wished for a war of extermination and that all Southerners would be driven like swine into the sea. She wrote to her husband, may we carry fire and sword into their states till not one habitation is left standing. She wrote this before the March to the Sea. Who was commanding Sherman? His wife? But, you know, did we not, and, you know, during the time that we were doing the unconstitutional wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and other places, didn't we hear Americans say basically the same thing that Sherman's wife was saying about the people who lived there? But, and I'm quoting here from Professor Thomas DiLorenzo's book. He says, Sherman's band of criminal looters, known as bummers, sacked the slave cabins as well as the plantation houses. And with the utter disregard for blacks that was the norm among Union troops, the soldiers ransacked the slave cabins, taking whatever they liked. A routine procedure would be to hang a slave by his neck until he told federal soldiers where the plantation owner's valuables had been hidden. Then there was the much heralded March to the Sea, where Sherman claimed in his memoirs, now, this is Sherman's words, and I quote, we destroyed more than $100 million in private property and carried home another $20 million more. Just admitted to theft of magnificent proportions. General Philip Sheridan perpetrated light terror on the citizens of the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. In the autumn of 1864, Sheridan's 35,000 infantry troops essentially burned the entire valley. As Sheridan described it in a letter to General Grant, in the first few days, he destroyed over 2,200 barns, over 70 mills. I have driven in front of the army over 4,000 head of stock and have killed not less than 3,000 sheep. Tomorrow I will continue with my destruction. One soldier wrote home that he had personally set 60 private homes on fire and opined, and I quote, it was a hard-looking sight to see the women and children turned out of doors at this session of the year. From a Sergeant William T. Patterson, he wrote that, quote, the whole country around is wrapped in flames. the heavens are aglow with the light thereof. Such mourning, such lamentations, such crying and pleading for mercy by defenseless women, I never saw or want to see again. People, do you really think this government cares about you? If they would do this, you know, and you're okay, you're going to say, oh, that happened a long time ago. Our government's much different. But can we refute in any way the terror that was brought to the American Indian by the federal armies after the law of northern aggression? You know, and here was the thing, and I brought this up years ago, was the Buffalo Soldiers. Remember them after the war, after the Civil War? They went into the South. Into the West. And they were involved with displacing the American Indian. Do we think that the Buffalo Soldiers went in? Several of them were given awards for, including a Medal of Honor for bravery in combat. Were these white people they were fighting, or were they people of color just like they were? Now, let's look at something from the official records about some of those things. But first, I don't want to run off and leave my wonderful guest in the dark here, or without a voice. Misty, any thoughts so far on what I've read?
Well, history definitely repeats itself. I mean, from this stuff is happening now, too, like over in other countries and stuff like that, where we're in different campaigns or whatever, and we're killing civilians. And I mean, it's the American way.
And it's not new.
No, it's not new. And I mean, I'd like to think, I know I'm wrong, but I would like to think that once people are exposed to the facts that they would wake up. But I mean, I know that's not going to happen, but man, I mean, it really, really opened my eyes. I mean, this is crazy. It doesn't surprise me what the government does now, but it surprises me that people are finding out what the government does and they keep supporting them. That's the part that's really shocking to me.
Well, let's remember that all through World War II, the churches and the people in Germany supported Hitler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and what's funny, I think it was in Bradley Butler's book, The War is a Racket, that here you had the church people saying to kill the Nazis, God is on our side. But then you had the people in the churches in Germany saying the same thing. We had to kill the Americans because God is on our side. I mean, I'm pretty sure that God is on neither one of those sides, but I could be wrong.
Any thoughts, Jen?
Oh, my goodness. so many. I got a traffic jam in my head right now. As the good book says, there's nothing new under the sun. Nothing. And to agree with Misty's words, not so long ago when the entire 9/11 thing happened, when I was still star-spangled, I was so moved and angered by what had happened that, wouldn't you know, I tried to enlist into the military in 2001. I tried very hard to. I was denied and disappointed for a couple years. And then in March of 2004, I tried again. I got a little further. Then they told me I was disqualified. And then a couple months later, the report of Abu Ghraib came out. And as is always the case, my gut turned and I thanked the Lord for me being born half blind that I couldn't serve in a military that was doing that. On your topic of Lincoln and Sherman and his swath to the sea, it's one thing to note that there were some on the northern side who were against what was happening. Be good to note that General McClellan requested to Lincoln that the war be fought without targeting civilians, and much to his dismay, Lincoln sacked him immediately, had him tossed for requesting such a crazy idea. And there were many northern printing presses that would print against the war. They said, if the South wants to separate, let them go, echoing Jefferson's words. Citizens in the North who were against it, they're like, hey, we've got nothing against the South. If they want to go, go. And on many occasions, Lincoln ordered his federal army to arrest them and imprison them with absolutely no cause other than they spoke against their emperor. So it's, and it has repeated throughout history with the military, the American military. And I have one example, and I'll save it for later if you would like to hear it. I researched it and was never taught it in school either. But it's echoed throughout our entire history from the beginning all the way to today that our military does things that 9 times out of 10 we're not informed of. And if we were informed, some of us would be utterly disgusted. Most of us wouldn't care because let's bomb them into a glass parking lot because that's the American way.
Well, we're almost up to the top of the hour. So here in a couple of minutes, we will get a little break and then we'll come back. And I would like to hear what your story is, Jennifer. Dave, you got anything to say before we hit that break?
Well, I just seem to remember something about Sherman burning down the city of Atlanta, and somehow that was okay because it happened during the Civil War. So, and look where we are now. Things have only gotten worse.
Well, then there were no Confederate troops in Atlanta when he did that either. That,
right.
That to me is the thing that really bothers me about these. And somebody remind me on the other side before we get back into the American Indians and the atrocities against them. Let's somebody remind me to talk about the rape of Athens, Alabama. Right on time. See you folks on the flip side. Thanks for joining us.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came and unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, welcome back, folks, to Addicted to Your Own Destruction. And we are talking about basically the theory of why should the South be punished for being racist, if that is in fact true. Because I think the North was just as racist. They didn't want black slaves, but they didn't want blacks, free blacks living with them. So it's kind of a hypocritical point of view. But we're also delving into atrocities of the American military, especially during and after the war between the states. And right before we went on break, Jennifer was going to share a story with us. So would you be so kind as to share that with us, Jennifer, please?
Yes, sir. I'd love to. This is, it's a history lesson, and it's one that, once again, no one is taught. And it occurred roughly 30 years after the Civil War. And it involved the Kingdom of Hawaii, which no one knows, no one I know, knows that Hawaii was a kingdom, a monarchy. It was, at the time this happened, it was ruled by a king. I cannot pronounce that name to save my life. God bless him. At that time, he was forced by local aggression, militias, and the like, mostly white people, business interests in Hawaii, led by one Sanford B. Dole, whose cousin would one day found the Dole Fruit Company, which had major vested interest in Hawaii. The militias forced him by armed threat to sign a new constitution, which has been nicknamed the Bayonet Constitution, in 1887, which pretty much wrenched the power from the king and vested it to these people, to business interests. Fast forward a few years later to Queen Liliuokalani. I can't pronounce her name. She was Hawaii's first and only queen. She took the place of the king, her brother, when he died. She was in the process of drafting a new constitution after throwing out the king's cabinet members. And to that constitution would have given the power back to the monarchy, but also would have reestablished voting rights to the financially disenfranchised Hawaiians and Asians who lived there. The business interests there, the Doles, the militias and such, they had been trying for years to overthrow her with uprisings. And eventually word got back to America. And this jumped between two presidents, President Cleveland, who served non-consecutive terms, and President Harrison, who was sandwiched in between. Neither president at the moment wanted to mess with it. But later on in the years, Cleveland decided, okay, it's time to do something. I mean, after all, we could use Hawaii to put in a lovely naval station. And so President Cleveland sent a United States military warship, the USS Boston, filled with United States Marines. Yes, the Marines, the few, the proud, to Hawaii. And they landed. They went to Honolulu. They surrounded the royal palace armed. And by threat of coercion, violent force, they forced Queen Liliuokalani to abdicate her throne, to step down as queen. And they essentially, literally, stole a country from their people. Liliuokalani, she tried to get herself back into power afterwards, was unsuccessful. She had finally written a letter. She had been imprisoned there in Hawaii for her efforts. She had written a letter, and in the letter, quote, she stated, "For myself, I would have rather chosen death than sign it. But to the thought of my people being killed, any sort of bloodshed, I had no choice." So she was forced by the benevolent United States military, the few, the proud Marines, to step down from her rightful throne. And that is one example, not of settlers or explorers moving and expanding in a land and clashing with the natives, but this was an example of the United States government actively stealing a country, taking it over with violence, with the threat of war. And that I wasn't taught that in school. I read that several years ago, and I was floored. And, of course, the next time people cut up a dull pineapple or peel a dull banana, maybe they should give a nod to Queen Liliuokalani and the Hawaiians who were usurped of their own lands.
Well stated, Jennifer. I was familiar with that. I'm not sure how many others are, but I was familiar with that, the America the Benevolent. But I promised before we started on this side, I promised that I would go into the rape of Athens, Alabama, and the way that that occurred. And let me ask all three of you before we get into that. We'll start with Jennifer. Are you familiar or were you ever taught about the rape of Athens, Alabama?
No, sir. In school, I had more interest in history than most of the other kids. And when they were talking and fiddling about, I would be flipping through the history book reading. Of course, then I didn't know it was a watered down federal version, but I would read about things. And I had read about the March to the Sea, but as a young kid, I didn't know what it meant. And no, I had no one. I was never taught about Athens.
Misty.
Well, of course not. I probably had about the same education that Jennifer had growing up in Arkansas. But I hadn't heard about it until I heard about it from you. So, no.
Dave, are you familiar?
I know a little bit about it, but I did not learn it in school.
Well, it seems that here's something that we weren't taught in school either, is that Lincoln had several commanders who were not citizens of the United States. He had some who even attained the rank of general who were not citizens of the United States. But one of the things that I wanted to relate before I get to Athens, Alabama, and I thought about this, was when the war broke out, Lincoln had a colonel in Missouri by the name of John C. Fremont. Perhaps people have heard from him. I am sure heard of him. I am sure that the people in California have heard of John C. Fremont. But one of the first things that John C. Fremont did at the outbreak of the war in 1861 was he went into Missouri and he freed all the slaves. Now, wasn't that what they were fighting a war for? That's what we've been told? That they were fighting this war to free all the slaves? Well, John C. Fremont thought so. And so John C. Fremont goes into Missouri and issues an order freeing all the slaves. Well, guess who rescinded that order? Abraham Lincoln. He first ordered Fremont to rescind the order, and Fremont said no. He refused to rescind the order, so Lincoln rescinded the order and took away Fremont's command, sent him to Virginia. So, was this war fought over slavery? You know, are we going to continue to believe this lie? But let's get on to Athens, Alabama. And one of these wonderful foreigners was a Russian in the Union Army. Oh, my goodness, a Russian. Now everybody's going to freak out. Russians interfering again. Well, we had a Russian by the Turgayevich. Of course, when he got to the U.S., he changed his name to Turpin, T-U-R-P-I-N. Some places it appears as T-U-R-P-I-N, some other places it appears as T-U-R-P-E-N. So he is marching his troops into Athens, Alabama, and there are no Confederate forces. They have already left the town. And so he is marching into Athens, Alabama, and as he marches into Alabama with his troops, the people of Athens, Alabama turn their backs on the Union troops, refuse to look at them as they come in. Well, this angered the good Russian, and so the good Russian told several of his subordinates, I am going out to reconnoiter, and when I get back, I don't want to see a house standing. So just like what happened in Mississippi, in Meridian, Mississippi, the town of Athens is demolished. Well, General William Rosecrans of the Union Army finds out about this. And so he says, okay, I'm bringing in Colonel Turpin, and we are going to put him under trial, and we're going to have a court-martial. So they have a court-martial procedure. Turpin is found guilty, and he is kicked out of the Army. Well, 2 days later, a few days later, I'm not exactly sure, it's a very short period of time, President Abraham Lincoln intervenes, and he not only puts Turpin back into the Union Army, he promotes him to general. So violence against civilians is rewarded in the Union Army. No wonder Sherman did what he did. So, Jennifer, had you heard about that?
No.
Uh-oh, we're having problems with your reception again, so you might want to get back on the porch.
All right.
Okay.
Is that any better?
That is much better. So I wanted to tell folks a story. I consider myself very, very, very lucky and fortunate, same thing, but privileged in many ways to have spent some time on Indian reservations during my lifetime, and was really fortunate to be on the Navajo Indian Reservation. And after being there for some time, I found out in their schools, I actually taught in a Navajo school as a substitute teacher, and I loved it. I remember the Navajos always talked about the Long Walk. That in 1864, Kit Carson came in, and he was led into the Navajo Indian Reservation by members of the Ute tribe. The Utes and Navajos still don't like each other. So anyway, this happens, and they come in and they gather up, cut down fruit trees, kill the sheep. They did all kind of things to the Navajos, and force them by force march to march to Bosco Redondo in southern New Mexico, which was basically in the desert. And many of the elderly in the Navajo died on that force march. And once they were there in Bosco Redondo, many of the women were raped by soldiers and guards. And I was talking to a Navajo one time, a gentleman out in Monument Valley, and we were talking, and I said, you know, I hope you don't mind me asking, but I said, I see something unusual about you. You have facial hair. And most of the Navajos I know do not have facial hair. And he said, oh, that all goes back to Bosco Redondo. And I said, why is that? And he said, well, our women were raped, and the gene of facial hair has been passed along into our bloodlines. And so he knew that it came from Bosco Redondo and the wonderful treatment at the hands of the U.S. military. And so I asked him, well, not him, but at a later time, I walked into a classroom in Red Valley, Arizona, on the Navajo Reservation. There was a gentleman there teaching in school that I really liked him. We had some great conversations, and he taught history. And I walked into his classroom, and on the wall, he had a picture of Abraham Lincoln, I think, which was standard issue to schools all over the country back years ago. But he had a picture of Abraham Lincoln, and I said, hey, you guys were really upset about the Long Walk, right? And he said, yes, very much upset about the Long Walk. That was an atrocity against our people. He said, many Navajos died on that trip. And I said, well, do you know which president ordered that to be done? And he says, no, I don't. I wasn't taught that. And I said, well, you got a picture of him on the wall right there above your desk. And he said, really? It was Lincoln? I said, yes. So he was unaware.
So even, of course, you wouldn't want to teach them the truth about that. But, you know, stop and think about it. That to me was also incredible.
So looking back at some of the atrocities that happened, let's look at Washita Creek. And I've actually walked that battlefield with a Northern Cheyenne as a guide. Just the two of us. I mean, it wasn't a tour or anything else. I just happened to be there and saw a Northern Cheyenne who happened to live nearby, and he volunteered to, it's in Oklahoma and it's on north of Interstate 40, quite a distance. And, you know, there's not a lot of visitors there. But anyway, at Washita Creek, before dawn, the troopers attacked 51 lodges, killing a number of men, women, and children. General Custer reported about 100 killed in his official report, though Indian accounts claimed 11 warriors plus 19 women and children lost their lives. More than 50 Cheyenne were captured, mainly women and children. Custer's losses were light, 2 officers and 19 enlisted men killed. Following Sheridan's plan to cripple resistance, Custer ordered the slaughter of the Indian pony and mule herd, estimated at more than 800 animals. The lodges of Black Kettle's people, with all their winter supply of food and clothing, were torched. Sand Creek. Let's look at the congressional testimony of one John S. Smith, an eyewitness to the attack by Colonel Shivington, who, by the way, was running for Congress in Colorado at the time. Question, were the women and children slaughtered indiscriminately or only so far as they were with the warriors? Answer, indiscriminately. Now, this comes from the official record, folks. Question, were there any acts of barbarity perpetrated there that came under your own observation? Answer, yes, sir. I saw the bodies of those lying there cut all to pieces. Worse mutilation than any I had ever seen before. The women cut all to pieces. By Mr. Buckaloo? Answer. How cut? Answer. With knives, scalped, their brains knocked out, children 2 or 3 months old, all ages lying there, from sucking infants up to warriors. Question. Did you see it done? Answer. Yes, sir. I saw them fall. Question. Fall when they were killed? Answer. Yes, sir. Question. Did you see them when they were mutilated? Yes, sir. By whom were they mutilated? Answer, by the United States troops. And we've all heard of Wounded Knee. Bury my heart at Wounded Knee, D. Brown. But American Horse, who was Lakota, here was his statement. There was a woman with an infant in her arms who was killed as she almost touched the flag of truce. A mother was shot down with her infant, the child not knowing its mother was dead, but it was still nursing. The women, as they were fleeing with their babies, were killed together, shot right through. And after most of all of them had been killed, a cry was made that all those who were not killed or wounded should come forth and they would be safe. Little boys came out of their places of refuge, and as soon as they came in sight, a number of soldiers surrounded them and butchered them. Dewey Beard, Lakota. I was badly wounded and pretty weak, too. While I was lying on my back, I looked down the ravine and saw a lot of women coming up and crying. When I saw these women, girls and little girls and boys coming up, I saw soldiers on both sides of the ravine shoot at them until they had killed every last one of them. Going a little further, I came upon my mother, who was moving slowly, being very badly wounded. When I caught up to her, she said, "My son, pass by me. I am going to fall down now." As she went up, soldiers on both sides of the ravine shot at her and killed her. I heard the Hotchkiss or Gatling guns shooting at them along the bank. Now there went up from these dying people a medley of death songs that would make the hardest heart weep. Each one sings a different death song if he chooses. The death song is
expressive of their wish to die. It is also a requiem for the dead. It expresses that the singer is anxious to die too. Now let's look at the statement from the commanding general, Nelson A. Miles. He said a detachment of soldiers was sent into the camp to search for any arms remaining there, and it was reported that their rudeness frightened the women and children. It was also reported that a remark was made by one of the soldiers that, quote, when we get the arms away from them, we can do as we please with them, indicating that they were to be destroyed. Some of the Indians could understand English. This and other things alarmed the Indians, and a scuffle occurred between one warrior who had a rifle in his hand and two soldiers. The rifle was discharged, and a massacre occurred. Not only the warriors, but the sick chief Bigfoot and a large number of women and children who tried to escape by running and scattering over the prairie were hunted down and killed. That's official statements, people. Those were officials of the government that you now trust with your life. Any thoughts on that, Dave?
Mike, that's shocking. It really is. I'm not really sure what to say other than it's shocking and profoundly sad.
Well, again, and I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but why is the South being condemned here? The only answer for that and what the South did, the only answer for that can be the sheer fact is that the South stood up to this corrupt government. And you can't have anything in history to reveal that someone stood up to this government and said no. That is the thing that has to be destroyed from the American mind. You can't see a monument to someone who said, no, I will not do what the government says we have to do. And yes, in the Southern secession documents, they mentioned slavery. Yes, they did. You know why they mentioned slavery? Because slavery was constitutional because it was included in the Constitution of 1787. It was it was allowed, according to them. They said, okay, we'll let it go on for 20 years. Well, you know, and they put no provision for ending it, slavery. So was it okay for our quote unquote founders to have slavery for 20 years? But then that's okay. And, you know, go to the official records and read about how some people fought against that. Luther Martin said to include slavery in this document when it wasn't in the Articles of Confederation. To include slavery in this document is a crime against heaven itself. But you know what was important?
Money.
Slavery was bringing in money. And over 90% of the slave trade was conducted out of the North, not the South. So they agreed that they would put one race of people owning another race of people into the Constitution because people were going to make money from it, North and South. The North were going to ship these slaves. The South was going to use them to raise crops. Any thoughts, Jen?
Absolutely correct. All the things were never taught about. Part and parcel to that would, of course, be the Corwin Amendment, which I learned about years ago through you, that, you know, was proposed to the Constitution that the South could keep their slaves if that was their desire, as long as they rejoined the Union. And that was endorsed by James Buchanan by signature, which was unprecedented. No president really did that, but he approved of it, signed it, and as he was outgoing, he handed it to Lincoln and said, give it a shot, and Lincoln gave it a shot. He was a great emancipator, was willing to sell out the entire black race to keep the money flowing. That was the problem. It was always about the money. And of the states in the South that that amendment was offered to, all of them rejected it outright, which blows the theory of slavery being the cause clean out of the water. But it's interesting to note that five states did ratify the Corwin Amendment into their books, and four of them were northern. One of them was a border state. So no southern state ever said, yeah, that sounds great to us. We'll take that. But Maryland and Illinois and Ohio and Rhode Island and Kentucky said, sure, that sounds like a deal. And three of those five states still have the Corwin Amendment on their books to this day. It has not been rescinded.
Well, what's amazing about the Corwin Amendment was Lincoln mentioned it in his first inaugural address, too. And it would have made slavery legal in perpetuity outside of the realm of Congress. Congress could not have even declared slavery illegal.
That's correct. The Supreme Court wouldn't have been able to challenge it. There would be slavery in existence to this day. Which, in a sense, there is slavery in America to this day. It's just a different day and age and a different method of going about it.
It's economic slavery now.
Yes, taxation slavery.
Right. We're all slaves on that great federal plantation. And it doesn't make any difference how big your cage is. If you're allowed to operate in a cage, if you can't, you can't own property. It's a facade. Just don't pay your taxes a year or two and find out if you actually own that property that you have title for. So, yes, the Corwin Amendment was very much a part of that. Misty, what are your thoughts on the atrocities that were perpetrated on the red man?
Oh, it's not something you're taught in school. I mean, I'd never heard of anything negative about Abraham Lincoln growing up in school. None of it. I mean, I'm sure that was their plan the whole time. Cause I mean, they tell you what to be afraid of and who is, who you blame. I mean, it's the same thing going on today with the wars that we're in today. They put this fear into us and we just accept it. And I mean, it's sad, but what do you do other than just keep learning?
Well, the thing that bothers me, I guess, more than anything else is the Americans who even when they see this, even when it becomes irrefutable by public document, it's like someone said to me, and matter of fact, he was a very dear friend. When I bring up stuff like this to him, he goes, oh, man, that was a different time. That doesn't count today. Well, really? How does that work? Dave, in your history exploits, were you taught about the crimes and depredations against the people of American Indian descent?
Well, I think there was a little bit of talk about it, but nothing on the scale that you're talking about. And certainly nothing, not a single bad word about saintly Abraham Lincoln. Absolutely not.
Well, in almost every survey that's taken in this country today, if you have asked the question about who was the greatest president in American history, for a second, how does that happen?
Yeah, good question.
So that is ignorance personified. And in the 2016 election, I thought this was amazing. In the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton was asked, if you could embody yourself as any president in American history, who would it be? And she said, Abraham Lincoln. A few weeks later, in a church in Detroit, Michigan, Donald Trump said that he was proud to be a member of the party of Lincoln. And he wanted to reestablish the Republican Party in the ideals of Abraham Lincoln. So in 2016, you had a choice between somebody who wanted to be Abraham Lincoln and somebody who was going to try to make the government again like Abraham Lincoln. And how many million of people voted for one or the other? As Thomas Jefferson said, you get the government you deserve. So what do you, is there an answer, Misty? Is there a way that we can get this thing back on track in your mind?
I'm not sure because of the mass indoctrination of people, but I know, just like you said, the if you're going in the wrong direction, your first move is to stop doing what you're doing. So I don't believe that, like most people say, well, we'll just vote them out in the next election. I mean, that's ignorant. So I don't know a solution, but I know what we're doing is not working.
Jennifer, do you see a solution?
No, this is often the moment where I'm called a Debbie Downer, a doom and gloom, or a wet blanket, and that is I personally don't. I don't see any solution to this. This system in place for over 230 years, it's put us where we are now, and much like ancient Rome, there's really no way of curtailing it, of trying to stop it. And I've compared America to ancient Rome more times than I can count, because everything we've, you know, the country has done, ancient Rome did everything, and the only outcome for Rome was collapse, splitting, and then collapse of both sides. And if secession takes hold in America, I don't know if it will, but if it does, I foresee it being just like Rome. The country would split, and both parts, one part would drop pretty quickly, the other part might make it a little longer, and then it would end as well. People fixing it from the inside, it will never happen as long as the population believes voting will fix it. They're holding on to a pipe dream that will never come true. I don't see it happening, and I learned that lesson 4 years ago when I cast my final vote, and I swore I would never do it again, and I won't. To me, it's as arbitrary as drinking coffee. It doesn't do anything. That's a lesson I've learned, and I learned it before then, but 2016 was the final straw for me, and I was done. Fixing something corrupt from within can't be done, and I'm sure you've known people who were in politics in D.C. who tried and were ousted every time, or converted into that empire. It can't be done. Not at the rate we're going. I agree with Misty. Too many people keep believing the lie. They'll never want to stop, because that's what they always say. Well, what else can we do? We have to keep doing what we're doing. What we're doing isn't working, but people don't want to see it.
Jen, have you ever heard of the Sobibor death camp in Poland?
I've read a little bit about each, as many of the camps as I could. Of course, everybody knows Auschwitz and several others. Sobibor I've heard of, but I didn't quite get into, I believe it was a work camp, was it not?
Well, it was quite a distinctive story, and I'm going to get into that in just a second, but I just want to ask, Misty, have you heard of Sobibor?
Just from you. That's it.
Dave, what about you?
Same answer. I've heard it, but exclusively from what you talk about, Mike.
Well, 1988, I was in Washington, D.C. area, was living down on Wilson Boulevard in Arlington. But I read in one of the local papers, I think it was the Washington Times, I read about they were going to be a program with a death camp survivor at, I don't know if it was the Kennedy Center or, you know, it was someplace in D.C. I remember that. And there was a lady who had been a survivor of the Sobibor death camp. And I use that, and it pops into my head so many times as an analogy. And she started out the story. One of the first things she showed everyone was the tattooed number on her wrist. And she talked of that. And then she said, well, we were sent to Sobibor. And it was, a camp like Auschwitz and the others. And said, we were there. And she said, we saw the trains come in. We saw the people get off. People were assigned work duties. They were assigned jobs. She said, I was a seamstress, and I was sewing this. I was sewing that. She said, and then somewhere during that existence, they brought in, the Germans brought in some Russian prisoners of war and brought them into our camp. And she said they were there about 4 or 5 days. And then they began to ask again. I would ask them over and over again, do you not see what's happening here? Do you not see that when those people go over there, when they march those people off, they never come back? Do you know, do not, you have to know what's happening to you. And so the Russian prisoners organized their fellow inmates into a, said, look, have you looked around? There are only so many guards guarding us. There's not enough guards to stop us if we get enough numbers and charge, and we can charge them and take their arms from them. And we can escape. And so they planned it, and they did it. And this lady was one of the ones who escaped. She said, yes, several were killed escaping, but we were going to die anyway. They were going to put us in an oven or put us in a, or gas us, like it happened to hundreds before us, or maybe thousands. And she said, we saw that. And she said, of the people who escaped, one of the most terrible things that we learned was that the people who lived around the prison camp in Poland, if they could, they captured those who escaped and turned them back over to the Nazis. And so the people, she said, those of us who escaped and got totally away, she said, it worried the Nazis so bad that the word was going to get out about their death camps in Sobibor. She said they came in with bulldozers and bulldozed the whole camp to the ground so that there would be no evidence in case the ones who had escaped told their stories. And I look at that today and I draw this analogy. I look around that and I see those of us, the people who are standing around, and if somebody came in and said, hey, guys, you know, there's something wrong with this picture. You know, this is not a pandemic. They're lying to you about the vaccines and the other stuff. And if someone convinces people that, like Misty was talking about the lady at the drive-thru, there are people out there who would get very angry at us for not wearing a mask, who would get very angry at us for denying a vaccine. And as I told someone the other day, I wondered so many times when I was young, when I first taught about World War II, I worried so many times and wondered, I'm sorry, not worried, but I wondered so many times, why didn't those people do something? You know, why did they allow this to happen? But boy, do I understand it now. When I look at the people who, like that lady with Misty, would get angry at you for not, for someone not wearing a mask. And there are going to be people who will actually, in this country, who actually would think you should be put to death for not taking this vaccine. That's coming. I promise you. It's coming. Any thoughts on that, Dave?
Oh, I agree with what you just said exactly, Mike, because they're already tossing around this concept of, you know, people that, you know, are vaccine skeptics are essentially biological terrorists. And there's an article I came across just today that, one of the federal agencies is actually saying that it is indeed legal for employers to require a COVID vaccine in order to work.
Well, let's go back 115 years. 1905, Jacobson v. Massachusetts, where the people, the Supreme Court said, yes, you can be forced to take a shot. Back then it was smallpox. Now it is whatever they want to call this thing. But 115 years ago, the Supreme Court said, your liberties are subject to the police powers of the state. 115 years ago, using the foundation that was laid by the founders in 1787, the Supreme Court used that to say, you have no rights, people. That was 115 years ago. Your rights are subject to the police power of the state. And Alan Dershowitz has already brought this thing up and talked about it on TV, this exact decision. You think they're not going to pull these things out and use them on you? You think we're not going to be looking at martial law? You think things are ever going to get back to the normal that we saw this time a year ago? I don't think so. Any thoughts on that, Jen?
Oh, my God, yes. I've been posting it on Facebook. That's one place where I go to.
Thoughts on that, Misty?
Hello? Uh-oh, am I not being heard?
I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. I moved my phone to the right spot on the porch. Okay. I've been posting it with increasing activity on Facebook that, yeah, people are still rolling their eyes at the thought of it, but it is. It is going to come to a mandatory vaccine order. And a friend of mine asked me, well, how do you think it's going to play out? And I said, well, look at history. It'll come out in three waves. Number one, they're going to try and buy you out. And, of course, Congress just approved $900 billion in coronavirus relief today, this evening. So step one is set to go. If that doesn't buy out enough people to be suckered, then step two will be the soft coercion. They'll start with the threats, with the hinting of threats. Hey, you know, your job can make it mandatory, so you might as well go ahead and take it. And, of course, like David just said, the whispers are already in the wind. I've read no less than five articles from different websites of news companies asking the same question, should it be mandatory? So it's already being set into people's minds. And if the soft coercion doesn't work, then will come step three. And that is the one method that the American government and military have never had any problem doing, and that is direct coercion. The order will be given, yes, mandatory nationwide. I don't know, maybe the incoming president will say it, or maybe the Supreme Court will say it. They can just throw this out like Mardi Gras beads, apparently. But the orders will come to the states, each state, one at a time, because money flows. We'll give you money if you get your people vaccinated, and it will come down to a door-to-door method. If people think door-to-door won't happen, they need to look at Hurricane Katrina and many other examples in American history where the military was called in to do dirty work. I see that happening. I see it being forced. I see it as the day coming when I'll be jobless, and when they come to my door, that will be the day I die, because I will not be shot. I will not be injected, and I won't leave alive in their custody.
Well, fantastic, Jen. Keep that phone in that ideal location.
Mike, can I just add one thing to what Jennifer just said?
Okay, I don't know what's going on, but we're probably not being nice. Somebody's messing with us. Misty, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, what are your thoughts on this, young lady?
Well, I'm with Jennifer on that. I think that's how it's going to go down, but I think that the majority of the citizens here are going to line up to get this vaccine, because I've seen them do it, and like our friend in Alabama who works at the hospital, he said that it was, you know, unreal, the line to get this vaccination. I mean, it's and then you got people. I seen this article today on Facebook that says U.S. airport traffic rising despite holiday travel warnings while COVID surges. The media plays a big part in making us afraid of this thing. But this guy's comment on here just blows my mind. He said, when people are stupid and get others killed, it sometimes becomes necessary for government intervention. So don't go crying when your travel and outbreak leads to loss of ability to travel.
Thoughts, Dave?
Yeah, Mike, could I just add one thing?
Please do.
Okay. I really like the term that Jennifer just used, whispers in the wind. That's exactly what they're doing. They're sort of rolling this out slowly, so people don't catch on. And just the other day, I heard some clip from the mainstream media by some government doctor. You know, the newscaster asked him, "Well, oh, Dr. So-and-so, are we going to have mandatory vaccines?" And what he said is, "Well, right now, we're focusing on voluntary vaccination. But in the future, if it becomes necessary, we may have to add further measures." So they're already telling us, slowly but surely, what is coming down.
Well, that's known in the intelligence field as gradual or regimented indoctrination. So you keep all you do is put it in the media or in the wind and put that phrase out there of, we may have to. Well, you know, you never can tell. We may have to. And so it is into the mind of the individual. And we will see picture after picture after picture after picture on TV of these people lining up to take the shots. And you will see celebrities and politicians taking the shot publicly. Of course, we have no idea what's in that shot. And I would promise you it's not going to be the same thing you get.
My money's on saline, sir.
Well, I could not agree more, Jennifer. I believe that totally. Obviously, it is not real. And we're seeing some things that are troubling, you know, in Australia. And I've got a good friend down there, Andrew McGregor. And he was with the Victoria Police in Australia. And I talk with him fairly frequently. And he was really big on exposing the fraud that was the Port Arthur massacre that... And hopefully we'll be able to have him on a program pretty soon, Dave. He was instrumental in exposing the fraud that was the Port Arthur massacre that occurred there. So looking forward to getting him on. But we were talking about this thing that, they're taking the vaccine and a few days later they're testing positive for HIV. And of course, the news media jumped to the task, as they would be wont to do. They didn't investigate it. They just repeated what they were told of, it's a false positive. And it's not accurate. And then we know that England, especially in London, they were one of the earliest to take this vaccine. And now they're suffering a massive outbreak of a new form of COVID. Of course, to think they might be related, gosh, nobody's that dumb, right? Any thoughts, Dave?
Well, they're already saying that there's a new, more contagious form of COVID that's going around the UK right now. And, of course, Boris Johnson just is locking down the country and is saying that we have no choice. We have to cancel Christmas.
Well, naturally, we have to do everything we can to disrupt the normal life. And what amazes me is that we continue to allow this. Got any projections on where you see this going, Misty? Uh-oh. There she is.
No, say that again. Sorry, I had a barking dog.
Do you have any thoughts on where you see all of this culminating? Do you see the steps being taken to ensure the total government domination of our lives?
Oh, I think Jennifer absolutely nailed it. I think that's how they do everything. I mean, they try to get people to volunteer to do it, and then they try to buy you, and then they force it upon you. I mean, it's the American way.
Absolutely. Well, we've got about 7 or 8 minutes left, and this is one thing I certainly do not want to miss doing, and that is I want to tell both Jennifer and Misty how very, very proud I am of both of you ladies, and it has been a pleasure to work and exchange ideas with you over the past few years. That has just been a treat for me. And so I want to thank both of you for the opportunity. And I guess that's about the best way I can say it. Any thoughts, Jennifer?
I'd actually would like to thank you, sir. And you're one of the few elders that I call sir. I used to call everybody sir and ma'am. It's kind of slipped, but I do call you sir with, you know, total intent. It's been an absolute honor to meet you and know you and call you a good friend and mentor. I've learned more in the last 5 years than I've learned in my entire life. Things that I never knew happened, never knew was in place. Now I know, and it's the case of trying to tell everyone else. Unfortunately, I'm met with Cassandra syndrome. No one wants to believe it, even though I'm trying to, hey, it's there. But I do thank you for imparting what you have on me. I know you've forgotten more than I'll ever learn, but I want to keep learning as long as I'm still drawing air.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. And the only thing we can do is to do as Isaiah did and, you know, speak out, and the remnant will hear us. The other people will call us crazy, but the remnant will hear us. And that's the only people we are responsible for. Any thoughts, Misty?
Yeah, I'm with Jennifer. You are such a blessing to me and a lot of other people. I mean, you've taught me the truth, and you know, that's what I want, the truth, whether or not it's, you know, fits in what what makes me comfortable, or if it doesn't make me comfortable, it's whatever, it's the truth. And I am so grateful for that. And I'm so grateful that you have taken my youngest child and, I mean, taught him the same thing. I mean, wow, Goose is a little savage, but I mean, the kid is, he's awake.
Well, that he is, and he is one of the things when I look at people the age of your youngest son and I see them beginning to see the truth and embracing the truth, it gives me hope for a future after the chaos is over, that someone, there will be some people around who can say, hey, you know, this is the way it should be. And we can hope for that. And, you know, again, thank you, ladies. You ladies have been super. And one of the things I have decided I really want to do with this program, Addicted to Your Own Destruction, is I don't want to bring in, of course, I've got other platforms to bring in some experts. But what I want to do is to continue to showcase the wonderful people that I have been able to meet and to know as we move along. I even think... according to his own admission, we have helped our friend Neil with his shyness issues. And so, hey, it hasn't been a total loss. And Jen, you were a little bit apprehensive about coming on for the first time. You seem to have survived quite well.
I guess I have. I've never been on any kind of a program of any sort before in my life. So this is a genuine first, and I'll cross it off my never have I ever list. I was always concerned that I would sound like your standard country bumpkin. We have that unfortunate stereotype that we're lowly and miseducated and we don't know our elbow from a barn door and we're just ignorant. And I hate that stereotype. It goes all over me.
Well, you are anything but ignorant, Jen. I can promise you that. Any thoughts, Dave, as we dwindle down the minutes here?
Well, no, I thought Jen did really excellent, and you said a lot of very insightful things, and this stereotype of the Southerner is something that was propagated by Northerners that is grossly inaccurate from my life experience.
Well, the one thing in my life I promise you I am proud of is I am a very proud Southron. And proud of my ancestors, and I know of at least 27 of them that I've been able to find with help of various records and official documents. 27 of them fought for the Confederacy. And it just absolutely makes me so very sad to know that their image has been tarnished, not by me and not by the others, but by idiots. And I guess there's not much we can do about that. Folks, we're almost out of time here, and it has been a wonderful experience to talk with Jen and Misty and Dave, and thank all of you who have tuned in. We appreciate it. We appreciate it very much, and we will be back next week on Addicted to Your Own Destruction. Dave, any parting words?
Just another excellent show. Lots of food for thought, and always appreciate hearing your information, Mike. I don't think I've ever listened to a show where I didn't learn something from you. So thank you.
Well, that's scary. Very quickly, folks, Rev Radio is a listener-supported platform, and you get to hear, you might not like it, but you get to hear what people think, and it is not censored or messed with. So here we go. We're coming up on the end of the show. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Misty. Thanks, Dave. Everyone, Merry Christmas.
Listening to Revolution.